Very attractive to fulfill lusty desires. Translation. The woman was protected on all sides by a five-hooded snake. She was very beautiful and young, and she appeared very anxious to find a suitable husband. What did you say after me? The woman was protected on all sides by a five-hooded snake. She was very beautiful and young, and she appeared very anxious to find a suitable husband. Srila Prabhupada's purport. The vital force of a living entity includes the five kinds of air working within the body, which are known as prana, pana, dhyana, samana, and udana. The vital force is compared to a serpent because a serpent can live simply by drinking air. The vital force carried by the air is described as the pratihara, or the bodyguard. Without the vital force, one cannot live for a moment. Indeed, all the senses are working under the protection of the vital force. The woman, who represents intelligence, was searching after a husband. This indicates that intelligence cannot act without consciousness. A beautiful woman is useless unless protected by the proper husband. Intelligence must always be very fresh. Therefore, the word aprabdham, very young, is used here. Material enjoyment means utilizing the intelligence for the sake of rupa, rasa, gandha, shabda, and sparsha, form, taste, smell, sound, and touch. Now I want to go on and read the next verse and purport as it continues along these lines, and then I'll discuss the verses. So text number 22, the woman's nose, teeth, and forehead were all very beautiful. Her ears were equally very beautiful and were bedecked with dazzling earrings. Prabhupada's purport. The body of intelligence enjoys the objects of sense gratification that cover it, such as smell, vision, and hearing. The word sunasam, beautiful nose, indicates the organ for acquiring knowledge by smell. Similarly, the mouth is the instrument for acquiring knowledge by taste, for by chewing an object and touching it with the tongue, we can understand its taste. The word sukapolam, nice forehead, indicates a clear brain capable of understanding things as they are. By intelligence, one can see things in order. The earrings set upon the two ears are placed there by the work of the intelligence. Thus, the ways of acquiring knowledge are described metaphorically. So the verses again. The woman was protected on all sides by a five-hooded snake. She was very beautiful and young, and she appeared very anxious to find a suitable husband. The woman's nose, teeth, and forehead were all very beautiful. Her ears were equally very beautiful and were bedecked with dazzling earrings. So now in the allegorical presentation, we've seen King Paranjana, the spirit soul, has been looking for various suitable places for fulfilling his desires. So he represents the soul or consciousness that has material desires. And so now he meets this beautiful woman. She has an entourage. First of all, very close to her, around her, protecting her on all sides, is the five-hooded snake. And then in the previous verse, we learned that there were 10 servants, each servant with hundreds of wives. So this represents the soul coming into possession of a material body for sense gratification. The woman is the central thing. She is intelligence. So you get the marriage of consciousness with intelligence. So the intelligence is required for sense gratification. And we'll talk about that a little more, how intelligence works. That's what I want to discuss today. Because this is the subtle material body as mind, made of mind, intelligence, and false ego. So here is intelligence. Here's another component, this five-hooded snake, which represents the five kinds of airs working in the body. According to Vedic understanding, the body is kind of a pneumatic machine, which works by the circulations of different airs, prana, apana, vyana, samana, udana. They work in different ways to operate your eyelids, make you belch, pass air, make your heart beat, and so on. So basically, this is the vitality, vital force. And previously, the 10 servants, we understand, represent the 10 senses, the 5 gyanindriya, or knowledge-acquiring senses, instruments, you could call them, the 10 instruments for acquiring knowledge, the instrument of sight, the instrument of taste, the instrument of smell, the instrument of touch, and the instrument of hearing. And then the 5 instruments by which we act back on the world, known as the karmendriya, the instruments of action, the tongue, the hands, the legs, reproductive organs, excretory organs. So these are the 10 servants accompanying her. So this way he comes into the position of being a material enjoyer. This intelligence is there. Kamarupini, very attractive to fulfill lusty desires. So looking for the husband to fulfill his lusty desires. Lusty intelligence. She represents lusty intelligence. So then we see here in the next verse how her nose, teeth, forehead, decorated ears indicate the ability of intelligence to use the instruments for enjoyment. The intelligence is needed. So what intelligence does is described in the third canto, where it says, Canto 3, Chapter 26, Texts 29 and 30, it says, the functions of intelligence are to help in ascertaining the nature of objects when they come into view, and to help the senses. Doubt, misapprehension, correct apprehension, memory, and sleep, as determined by their different functions, are said to be distinct characteristics of intelligence. So the subtle body has 3 functions: the function of mind, function of intelligence, and a function of false ego, or ahankara. So we are especially concerned with intelligence as devotees, because this intelligence is actually the well, Prabhupada calls intelligence the form direction of the super soul. Intelligence is being operated ultimately by Supersoul. So that's where Krishna has his hand in things. And when he says in Bhagavad Gita, I am situated in everyone's heart, and from me comes remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness. Now this is the same thing in this verse. Remembrance, knowledge, and forgetfulness are described as the functions of intelligence. So there, Krishna mentions those because he is actually the controller of intelligence. So that's the big facilitator. That's the big facilitator. So intelligence is higher than the mind. So what the mind itself is simply the repository of all ideas of sense gratification. And all the mind does is simply accept things and reject things in terms of sense gratification. If it feels good, you accept it. If it feels bad, you get rid of it. It's instant reaction. Instant reaction of just accepting and rejecting in terms of sense gratification. The senses deliver feelings up to our consciousness, and is the mind which either says they feel good or feel bad. So that's simply the function of the mind is like that. But actually we find, first of all, that the function of intelligence are to help to ascertain the nature of objects when they come into view. Now that is a function of intelligence. In other words, certain phenomena, because intelligence helps the senses, it also works directly with the senses. So for example, when you see the face of somebody coming toward you on the street, and there's something about that face that's a little familiar, and then all of a sudden you recognize that person. That recognition is a function of intelligence. That recognition is a function of intelligence. Because what's happening? The same sense data is in front of you, the same apparition in front of your eyes, but suddenly you recognize. So that is intelligence, which causes that act of recognition. Because doubt, misapprehension, correct apprehension. So misapprehension is a function of intelligence. When you mistake one thing for another, when you see a snake as a rope, and then suddenly it clears up, your sense data may be the same, but what shifts around your perception, that is intelligence. I want to show you another function of intelligence. This is a little drawing here I'm going to hold up. What is it a figure of? A duck. Are you sure that's all there is to it? Let me show you something else. You see a duck, but here are the ears, here's the eye, and here's the mouth. What is that? It's a rabbit. So you can see a duck, and then, or I give you some instructions and you see a rabbit. This figure is known as the duck rabbit. Now, whether you see a duck or whether you see a rabbit is a function of intelligence. And it's very easy to sit here and to look at it because you can't see both a duck and a rabbit at the same time. And you can go back and forth and you can see a duck and then you can see a rabbit and then you can see a duck and then you can see a rabbit. But that's when it says here that function of intelligence are to help in ascertaining the nature of objects when they come into view. Now you see that working here. And actually, psychologists, I got this out of a book by a philosopher named Ludwig Wittgenstein who has dedicated many pages to this drawing, trying to figure out what goes on when this takes place. Because this phenomena is the way we end up, I mean, this works when you deal with the whole room, the whole world, because this is on the level of just the sense of sight, whether you see a duck or you see a rabbit. And that's the function of intelligence. So on a higher level, whether you see Krishna or you see Maya, that's also function of intelligence. From me comes remembrance, knowledge, or forgetfulness. The material world is like this. You can, just as you can see either a duck or a rabbit. So in the material world, you can either see Krishna or you can see Maya. And which you see depends on intelligence. And where does that intelligence come from? That is the super soul. So intelligence performs this function right away in helping the senses to ascertain the nature of objects when they come into view. Otherwise, to collect, to categorize, to recognize this is that. It's not just sense data. It's not just perception. Because the perception, the sense datum is the same, whether you see a duck or whether you see a rabbit. That's not out here. That's somewhere up in here. So that is a function of intelligence that helps the senses. Prabhupada says in the purport to this verse in the third canto, intelligence is the discriminating power to understand an object. And it helps the senses make choices. Therefore, intelligence is supposed to be the master of the senses. The perfection of intelligence is attained when one becomes fixed in the activities of Krishna consciousness. By the proper use of intelligence, one's consciousness is expanded, and the ultimate expansion of consciousness is Krishna consciousness. So intelligence has its higher and its lower functions. Now, the big discrimination of intelligence that takes place is misapprehension, for example. Seeing what something is, identifying something, this is this, or the phenomena of seeing as. We see this as this. And believe me, there's volumes and volumes and volumes and volumes of works on philosophers trying to understand this process, because to them it's the process by which we make a world. There's one book I read in college called Mind and the World Order. You know, we get all the stuff comes in from our senses, but somehow or other we make sense of it, we understand it, we get a grasp on it. All that's the function of intelligence that intelligence carries out. So misapprehension and correct apprehension, these are functions also of intelligence. So it is a function of intelligence which causes me to think or to identify myself with the material body. That's misapprehension. I am this body. And with that goes a whole way of life, a whole world view. And the intelligence is working for sense gratification. Similarly, it is a function of intelligence when I understand I am not this body. This is discrimination. So this discrimination, I am this body, I am not this body, to see the world one way or to see the world the other way, to see myself one way, to see this myself the other way, that is also the function of intelligence. So it is ultimately intelligence which orients us toward Krishna or away from Krishna. And intelligence always is receiving direction from Krishna. He's the facilitator who sees the desire of the living entity and gives him the intelligence by which he can see one or the other. Just as if you see this one way or the other, your intelligence, in order to work, has to receive some direction from an authority. So I held this up and people saw a duck, I guess, and I said, no, look, see, a rabbit. And then you get directions from an authority and then you say, oh yes, now I see it. But if nobody pointed out, you may not have seen it. Nobody pointed out, you could go on seeing a rabbit or a duck or whatever it is for hundreds of years and never see the other side. But somebody points it out, then you can see. That's the nature of intelligence. Prabhupada says it receives direction as from a higher authority. And that higher authority of intelligence is ultimately the Supersoul. So he reveals things by actually, just that you could call this an act of revelation to say, see this, see the rabbit or see the duck. Somebody points it out, you say, oh yes, it's there, now I see it. Before I didn't see it, it was right in front of my eyes, but I didn't see it. Interesting phenomenon, it was right in front of my eyes, so I didn't see it. Actually, Krishna is right in front of our eyes, but we don't see it. We don't see. So this is how intelligence works. And when intelligence is lusty, sometimes it becomes a little confusing because we speak in two different ways. Let me just add this little. Sometimes we speak of having intelligence, being someone who has intelligence is spiritually oriented, and if they are materialistically oriented, they have no intelligence or small intelligence. Or another way to speak, but a more precise way to speak of it is they have material intelligence. They're spiritual. They may be very intelligent in one way. Because another thing that you see with intelligence is determination goes along with this. You may see people who are very intelligent for sense gratification. Ultimately, that's not intelligence, or it's a misuse of intelligence. But anyway, I wanted to clear that up. But anyway, when the intelligence is lusty for sense gratification, then that's what causes us to acquire the false ego of identifying ourselves very strongly. I am this body. And to embark. On various projects to satisfy the self. Another function of intelligence it mentions here is doubt. That's also there. And doubt is a function of intelligence. But ultimately, another thing about intelligence that we see is Prabhupada's statement that the Bhagavad Gita is on the platform of intelligence. He described that there's the platform of the mind, platform of the gross body, platform of the mind, platform of intelligence, and platform of the soul proper. He describes them as culture. Culture of the body, that's the word he uses. Culture of the body, culture of the mind, culture of intelligence, and culture of the soul proper. Now, what does this mean? Culture of the body is people who are engaged in gross bodily activities for sense gratification. Eating, sleeping, mating, defending. That's their interest. That's the culture of the body. Then above that is the culture of the mind. These are people who are engaged in intellectual pursuits, and it's exemplified in, say, the kinds of studies that go on in universities. And ultimately the culture of the mind is mental speculation. The thing about, because these things are what's called the manorata, the chariot of the mind, on the mental platform, the chariot of the mind, is called, the mental platform has wheels because it moves all over the place. So the thing about the mind is, even when you get into intellectual things, it's something as a result of mental speculation. It comes and it goes. Your conclusion is not fixed. It may be like this, it may be like that. We think it's like this, it thinks like that. One puts forth theories and hypotheses, and they're being played, you play with them all the time. This is the nature of mental speculation on the mental platform. So that you see that with the history of philosophy of mental speculation, it's just one thesis after another thesis. People try out idealism, they get tired of idealism, they go to empiricism. They get tired of empiricism, they go to pragmatism. They get tired of pragmatism, they try out phenomenology. They get tired of phenomenology, they try out logical positivism. They get tired of, you know, this, that. And it can be a lot of fun. People will pay you to do it. It's useless. Or almost useless, practically useless. Because there's no conclusion. There's no ascertained conclusion. And it's based on reason and argument. So that characterizes a mental platform. There's accepting and rejecting. There's accepting and rejecting. But then Prabhupada says the culture of intelligence is higher. And that is exemplified, he says, by Bhagavad Gita. Bhagavad Gita is on the culture of intelligence. Because in the Bhagavad Gita we come to a fixed and ascertained final conclusion that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead and we surrender to Him and all doubts are put aside. Now, people in the West, they don't understand this higher function of intelligence. And a lot of times, when it works, they call it faith. But it's not faith, because they're on the mental platform. When they see, anybody on the mental platform sees somebody who's actually intelligent, who has, by the use of intelligence, has come to a final and fixed conclusion. They don't understand that at all. They think a person has become dogmatic, closed-minded, and that person has faith. Because knowledge to them, a very interesting idea that they have. They have the idea that if you have knowledge, you can change it. It can change. That knowledge is changeable. And they'll say things like that. We know today that we used to think that human beings appeared on the earth. I don't know what the figures are. I don't know any figures. Human beings appeared on the earth. I'll just make something up. 500,000 years ago. We used to think human beings appears on the earth today, 500 years ago. We now know today that they appeared in the earth 1.2 million years ago. That's how they speak. And then they're open to the possibility. Although they say, we now know today, 1.2 billion years ago, that everybody's still digging, and as soon as somebody finds some other bone and announces another date, they'll say, we used to think they appear one, but we now know. But the point is, they never knew. How did they know, and did that mean they never knew? Because how can it be knowledge if it's false? It's not knowledge, it's ignorance. Anyway, they have this idea so if you actually know something, the fact is that, and you know it, you've apprehended that object, then you don't change your mind because you have knowledge. Which is the correct apprehension of reality. So in the... sometimes they don't understand this. They may think. There are regions of reality to which the mental platform can't attain to. You have to come to the intellectual platform. What happens at the intellectual platform is you meet the super soul. You meet the controller or director of intelligence. And you accept the authority of the controller or director of intelligence. Then you learn how the mind works and you learn how the intelligence works. And Bhagavad Gita isn't on the platform of intelligence because intelligence, when fully cultivated, leads to this conclusion, Mamekam Sharanam Raja. Just take shelter of me alone. Intelligence properly used, properly cultivated, leads you to full understanding, I am not this body, I am servant of the master of the intelligence, who is Krishna. Then beyond Bhagavad Gita, so the culture of intelligence leads to surrender to Krishna, with all doubts being put aside. That is intelligence. And then, and of course, the other function of when one is intelligent or has proper intelligence, one can control the senses. But here we see the function of the senses is to help the senses. Ultimately, when there is intelligence, the senses are controlled. When the intelligence is materialistic, or to say it's weak, it cannot actually control the senses. It gets controlled by them. Or the mind overwhelms the intelligence. The mind is stronger than the intelligence. This works like this. You can see intelligence and mind work together in a simple thing. If you're ordered by a physician to take some medicine for your illness, and you take a spoonful of the stuff and it tastes putrid, the first impulse that you can't help is to spit the stuff out. You get a bad taste in your mouth, you just want to spit it out instantly. That's just an instant reaction. That's the mind, accepting and rejecting in terms of sense gratification. And if you're a little child who has no developed intelligence, you'll just spit it out. And the external manifestation of intelligence, your parents will have to force you to take it. When you're an adult and your intelligence is developed, you'll overrule the rejection of the mind and you'll do it anyway. So of course this is going on. If you're totally mental, you can't even walk across the room, because it requires some sense control. The mind doesn't control the senses. Intelligence controls the senses. And you see, when people who take intoxicants like marijuana, and which dissolves intelligence very, very rapidly, they get so mental that they can't walk across the room. They're going to walk across the room and they'll see the pattern on the floor and they'll start staring at the pattern on the floor and they'll get tripped out on the pattern on the floor. And they'll stay there and never get across the room until somebody pushes them, and then they go here and then they see this and they get... And children are the same way. They're very distracted. Their senses are distracted all the time. Similarly with some kinds of intoxicants that destroy intelligence. So intelligence has to be there to some extent just to stay alive, because it requires that in order to control the senses. But so when the senses are really controlled by Krishna consciousness, then that requires a great deal of intelligence. So that is also part of Krishna consciousness. Then of course, when intelligence is actually fixed up, Prabhupada uses this term, fixing up, to get fixed up. That was the slang term that was the devotees used to use when I was first joining the movement. It's gone out of fashion. People used to say, is he fixed up yet? Is he a fixed up devotee? Or he's a really fixed up devotee. Remember that? He's a fixed up devotee. Means your intelligence is fixed up at the feet of Krishna. So, when intelligence is finally fixed up, then one can go on to the platform of the soul proper, which is represented by Srimad Bhagavatam. So that's the meaning of intelligence. What we'll see here when Maharaja King Paranjana, he meets the woman who, on one level of this allegory, is intelligence. He's the soul, and so we'll see how he fares with lusty intelligence. How he gets misled like that by his lusty intelligence. Also, of course, in another level in the purport, we just get a discourse on the perils of sexual relationships. So that's also worth attending to. But also there's the allegorical point here. So we should be we should be getting off the mental platform. The point of Bhagavad Gita is, one, just like Arjuna, he has doubts in the beginning. But by the time one is finished going through the process of Krishna consciousness, where one learns actually who the authority is, who is the controller of my intelligence, and that authority is the Super Soul. That authority is Krishna, who is the controller of my intelligence. And we meet that authority and we surrender to that authority. Then we have actually accomplished our goal. But people will not understand this. This whole culture, they know nothing higher than the mental platform. They won't understand. If you're on the mental platform, you won't understand intelligence. You'll think that, oh, here's Bhagavad Gita, one more interesting theoretical proposal. And they do like that. If you go to a university, it'll be treated that way. Something, again, to be... And they do like that. They accept it and reject it. And on the basis of what? Ultimately on the basis of sense gratification, gross and subtle sense gratification. So no, people have no idea of this idea of what intelligence is and how it actually works. Here it is. So intelligence is basically what orients us. Are we going to surrender to Krishna? Because intelligence conducts our surrender. See, this is what people don't know. They don't know that ultimately they are surrendered one way or another. They are controlled. Everybody is controlled by a higher power. Every single jiva is under the control of a higher power. And either you're surrendered to Krishna directly and conducted by him through the internal potency, or you're surrendered to Krishna indirectly and conducted by him through the external potency. And which one you choose, that choice, that discrimination, that is done by intelligence. That is done by intelligence. And the Bhagavad Gita is just trying to teach us, don't surrender to the material energy, don't be controlled by your senses, don't be controlled by your mind, be controlled by Krishna, who is the original director of your intelligence. So some way or another we're surrendered. We have to be. It's our constitutional position to be surrendered. And by the correct use of intelligence, we'll be surrendered to Krishna. Otherwise, we'll be surrendered to the material energy and put into the meat grinder of samsara. If that's what you want, that's what you get. So by intelligence, we learn, we get the information by which we can discriminate properly between what is illusion and what is reality. That's the ultimate duck rabbit. So we have to become trained in that way. Yes, you have a question? That's right. Well, that's what, when in your heart you want to surrender to Krishna, then Krishna in your heart gives you the intelligence. He starts to control your senses. You see, when you the more you become a devotee, the more Krishna directly controls your senses for you. So he starts to push you in a different direction. The first thing he does, he brings you into contact with devotees. He leads you to his external manifestation, the spiritual master. So you're being pushed in that way. But if also you have desires not to surrender to Krishna, then also your intelligence will go the other way. That's also become, for me, becomes apohanam. Apohanam means shoving aside, forgetfulness. So you can't be in Maya without Krishna's mercy. Yeah. Well, the intelligence, as it says here, the intelligence can't function without consciousness. So the two go together. And it's not that intelligence really has some independent function. So it's usually the desire of the soul. The only thing is that once in a while, by some causeless mercy, causeless means you can't explain it, Krishna will influence the spirit soul to come to Krishna without any desire on his part. Discernible desire of his part. Otherwise, it's the desire of the soul that leads. But somehow, just because of causeless mercy, the spontaneous desire of Krishna or the spontaneous desire of another devotee, someone will be led to Krishna consciousness almost as if by force. Yeah? Well, because there's an ultimate subject, Krishna. If it weren't for Krishna, you couldn't speak of a real world out there. But because there's Krishna, whose subjectivity is the absolute truth, whatever he thinks it's like, that's what it's like. And he gives us our grants to create our own little umwelts, our own little subjective bubbles, which may or differ to some degree or another with what's really there. But because of Krishna, we can speak of what's really there. Otherwise, you're right, as philosophers who leave out Krishna or the absolute truth, you're always locked into some form of subjectivism, either individual or collective. Well, first of all, Prabhupada has told us that I've given you everything you need to know. And what Krishna always does is if we ask the right questions, that is, and the right question is, really, there's only one right question. What do I need to do, given where I am right now, to make advancement in Krishna consciousness? That's really the right question. And if we're asking that right question all the time, then we're always given the answer. And when you're given an answer, you that to the right question, you're given the right answer, you understand it. So what the difficulty is sometimes we're given the answer and we don't recognize it, because we have other motives too, because sometimes we're saying, how do I advance in Krishna consciousness and how do I keep on with a certain amount of sense gratification at the same time? And if the answer creates a conflict in us, then at that point we won't accept the answer. So then we become a little bit baffled. And because our problem is that we still have material attachments. What can be done at that point, I don't know. But how do you recognize the answer? Well, if you actually sit down and you'll see, yes, you can see that, yes, if I do this, I can see exactly how I will advance in Krishna consciousness. I will see how my service will increase, my sense gratification decrease, and so on. We know what all the things that happen when one advances in Krishna consciousness. We'll say, yeah, this will happen. And that's really all we have to worry about, is what do I have to do to advance in Krishna consciousness? That's our main thing. How do I engage myself more and more and more in Krishna's service, given my own self, given my background, given my problems, given my circumstances? How do I do that? And sometimes I guess the questions get a little complicated. And that usually we also, and this is the second part, is we have other devotees to consult with if we're baffled and bewildered.